Countdown is almost over. Mumbrella 360 begins next Wednesday at the Hilton Sydney. Get ready to hear from over 170 international and domestic marketing experts across six stages. Dive into successful case studies and discover new strategies from big name brands including TikTok, Uber, the BBC, Spotify, Meta, and more, exclusive only to Mumbrella 360. You'll also hear a Mumbrella Cast Live special featuring Mim Hysom of Suncorp and Nick Garrett of Deloitte Digital. Don't miss out on the biggest media and marketing event of the year. If you haven't already booked, now's the time to do it at mumbrella.com.au/Mumbrella360. Welcome back to the Mumbrella Cast. I'm Callum Jaspin, and today we regroup for another audio edition of Campaign Review. You'll hear from two of the industry's top talents on some of the Australian brands and creative agencies' newest and best work. We'll look at ads from UN Women, Fuck the Cupcakes, Cars 24, Ampol, McDonald's, and 5AM. Then, in line with the release of the Create Space Report and Action Plan, the ACA's Tony Hale and Hannah Sturrock will join the podcast to discuss the findings of the industry-wide census and how the body looks to press forward to drive change. Joining me today is Chief Strategy Officer at Howitson & Company, Dom Hickey. Welcome, Dom.
Hi, good to be here.
Great to have you here. And joining us as well is Creative Director at BMF, David Roberts. Hey, David, how are you doing?
Hey, guys, good.
We were supposed to be joined by my colleague Kalila, but unfortunately she has joined the many, many Australians at the moment to be struck down with COVID. So sorry to hear that, Kalila, and we wish you the best. So let's crack into it with the first ad. I thought, seeing as it is a particularly feisty Winter's Day, we should start with the Macca's winter spot from DDB. It takes a sort of Attenborough-style look at the Aussie winter activities, and you can sort of feel the cold coursing through the camera work there. Dom, why don't we start with you, considering this was from your old home, DDB. What do you make of this one? How does it kind of stack up against the usual Macca's work?
Yeah, I really like this spot. I actually think Macca's don't normally celebrate winter, so it was nice to see them show up in this moment. I think there's a really good truth in the ad, which is Aussies really hate winter. We kind of spend winter not wearing the right clothing, not really having warm houses and just huddling together. So I just felt there was a good truth there. I think Macca's role is always about being in culture and playing in culture but not overtaking it. So I felt like the role of the brand here played out quite nicely. For me, this is one of the freshest spots that Macca's has done for a while.
Yeah, I would agree. You could definitely feel that there was sort of that Macca's tone throughout it, without it kind of, stepping on the toes of their usual summer vibe, as you say there. David, what were your thoughts on this one?
Yeah, I agree. It's one of those ones maybe that kind of works at you a bit more over time. The more you watch it, I think there's a real gentle truth to the insight that I think sort of grows. You know, we do huddle together in winter. So, you know, I mean, the other thing, you know, I like penguins. I like penguin analogies. So it's got it's got that going on. You know, I think it's got a real, you know, I think it'll really resonate as something that's got, it's very, very relatable. So I think it'll do well.
Do you think the fact that they sort of did play on that sort of very recognisable Attenborough style sort of immediately endears it a little bit to the viewer?
Yeah, I mean, I guess the, you know, just aping the nature documentary, you know, has been done quite a bit in creative campaigns over the years, but I think this has a fresh take to it. So I think it's got its quite charm, but I think people will get it, yeah. And, you know, the cut to the family watching the penguin doco at the end, you know, eating Macca's, kind of, you know, just makes it nice and clear for everyone. So I think it's a good populist ad that, you know, would do well.
So next up, we'll take a look at Ampol's new spot from Saatchi & Saatchi, Powering Our Way of Life. This is the second campaign since the brand, rebranded from Caltex. And it looks at Ampol's future-facing energy solutions, which include a rollout of its AmpCharge electric vehicle charging solutions. David, we'll stick with you to start on this one. There's been, I guess, a lot of conversation recently and global sort of movements in particular in Cannes about sort of coming up and giving opposition to fossil fuel companies and their advertising. They've made a pretty clear change to sort of focus on the future energy here. What did you make of that?
I wonder if it's one of those ones where it's an ad about what they plan on doing in the future rather than what they're actually doing. And, you know, I mean, it would be great if that rollout is happening like they say, but obviously we know brands are pretty, you know, famous for doing ads about what they hope to do, you know, distracting you from what they're actually doing. You know, remember BP changed their name to Beyond Petroleum many years ago, and, you know, they still sell plenty of the stuff. So, yeah, if they are doing that, it's great. I mean, I thought this spot has really great direction. I thought there's some, you know, really great sort of style to it. The floating pie is probably my favorite moment in there, but I don't know if it all clicks together. The strategy for me, that it's sort of, you know, it's very kinetic, lots of really cool things, but I'm not sure the powering our way of life really comes through.
Yeah.
I'm not sure it all sort of sticks together for me.
Yeah, this is a hard job for them. I think fossil fuels are the new tobacco, so they're rapidly becoming everyone's favourite industry to hate. I don't think as a brand they can go dark while they make that transition to something cleaner. So this felt like a good way to almost distract people a little from the problem. There's some good clean energy cues in there. I thought it was really nicely shot. It's deliberately warm. I love the pie shot as well. Like, I think that just brings a real human moment into it. I felt like it was really busy. There was a lot going on. I almost would have liked to have seen it as the same shots in a 60 with a bit more space, or a shorter version with a bit less going on. But I think given the challenge that they've got and the, you know, where they're at the moment, they've done a really nice job of bringing the energy into it for the average consumer.
Yeah, of course, it is a sort of focus time for, I guess, these fossil fuel clients. We have that AGL pitch, which, as we understand, has been put on hold while the company kind of decides where its future lies as well. To your point, David, I mean, you know, coming up with marketing while you still are deciding, you know, where you stand on these issues is a tricky task. So let's move on to, we've got two here on a sort of similar topic area, but they both definitely take different approaches. Let's start with the Fuck the Cupcakes one, which was a campaign from InOcean. It's a longer sort of campaign video, and it's the first four Fuck the Cupcakes, the industry movement. It centers around a male office manager in a sort of thick of it peep show style ad. With the, you know, I think it mentions at the end, the man displays 34 acts of sexism across the complete spot. Dom, what did you think of the sort of direction that this one took, and the overall intention and the execution?
Yeah, I think this is such an important piece of work, and I really wanted to love it and champion it, but it fell a little short for me. And I think maybe strategically that's because my challenge is trying to understand who it's trying to influence and what they're trying to get them to do. So it felt like the parody treatment of it took it to a certain space. The scenarios were really overt, and I think we're facing into issues that have evolved a little. So sometimes the harassment or the issues that women face are a little bit more covert or a little bit sort of less out in the open. And it just, I couldn't work out if it was for men or women. It felt like uncomfortable watching for everyone. And it landed in the space of a bit of a sexual harassment training video for me, which may not be a bad thing. That might be where they were trying to take it to, but it was a long piece of content that I think I wasn't quite sure where they were trying to land.
Yeah. And I mean, Fuck the Cupcakes do sort of describe themselves as kind of trying to force, men into action over these issues, and I think that was the focus, but it was potentially unclear with the shots in the mail. It's funny you say some of these issues like that, but then, you know, last week we had the British Prime Minister Boris Johnson being asked by a select committee if he described one of his male colleagues as being handsy, which was one of the terms used in the clip there. So David, what was your sort of take on that one? Is it maybe directed at men? So how did you perceive it?
Yeah, I mean, the Boris Johnson thing is interesting because maybe that is one of those things that, like Dom said, where it is more insidious and it is more, you know, subtle, where perhaps if that was, you know, the Boris Johnson thing, someone being, you know, assaulting someone, and perhaps it was someone that you might think of traditionally as being more on the receiving end of that, it would have been perhaps much more black and white, but maybe because it was a bloke and a bloke, he sort of dismissed that and thought, oh, that's not the same thing.
Yeah.
So I don't know. It's interesting. So I think that sort of proves the point that it's perhaps in the more, the less obvious examples where people need to sort of really understand, you know, where lines are crossed. So, yeah. Anyway, but yeah, look, the cause I think is really important. You know, I think they seem to have that real sort of agitating aspect to what they're trying to do, which I think is really good. I think the maybe the use of exaggeration doesn't quite land. I think the you know, the blatant examples that you're seeing through the film probably aren't the biggest challenge. It maybe it is some more of those you know, the subtle things, and I think just the way it's tied together at the end, I think it maybe could have been a little bit clearer. You know, the I was just sort of thinking there was something that I saw recently that was for the Reform Alliance. It was about reforming parole, and the video started actually told you at the very beginning what you're about to see here. Everything is technically illegal, and then the film played out, and it was actually all these examples of parole violations where there can be really human, understandable reasons why that might happen. And therefore, I think the rug pull at the end of it just makes you feel really, I guess, shocked and wanting to kind of do something about it. I think in this film, the way it ends with, you've seen all these examples, you know, a 30 of them, you know, weren't unspoken, and you can't stop casual misogyny with silence. It feels like there's a real layering of different, perhaps conflicting messages that, don't make it as clear to what the message is and exactly what the outtake is for people watching.
Yeah. And then following on from that, we had the campaign from UN Women from the Monkeys Pav Accenture song. This one takes, I guess, a bigger look at gender equality, obviously not just in the office and the industry, kind of focuses on the many feats that they are predicting humans will, well, I guess that have been predicted that humans will achieve over the next however many years, including the first trillionaire, 70-year age-reducing technology, a transatlantic shuttle, and these will all come before equality is achieved for women. Dom, a very different tone here. What did you make of that?
Yeah, I think it's really hard for them to follow the work that they did last year, which was really celebrated and incredibly well done for, you know, the When Will She Be Right work. And I think they've done a really brilliant job. I don't think you can follow it the same way. And I think they've come at it in a totally different way, but really the same message that progress isn't happening fast enough. I think the out-of-home work really takes your breath away. The stats in the out-of-home work are such a strong rallying cry. They're really beautifully designed. It's brutally simple, and they're absolutely shocking. In the film, I found maybe the craft got in the way of the message a little. It was just a harder get, but I think as a campaign, once it's combined and you sort of start to see different messages, it's really, really great work.
Yeah, I really love this campaign. I think just the biggest thing that hit me, and I think that pulled me into the spot, was it's so unnerving, the tone that they've gone for, the sort of quite unsettling, unnerving music and everything about it. It feels like it really suits the fact at hand, that it is unnerving and it's unsettling, as is the fact that they lay out. So it really got me. I just think it's also perhaps because of the tonal decisions they've made, the creative decisions they've made, it makes you feel quite reflective, you know, and by the end it's got also there's a real optimism to the CTA with when they lay out that fact and then let's change that. It really invites you, sort of, you know, pulls you in to want to engage with the topic. So yeah, I really, really like this one. I thought it was really compelling. I think, you know, one of the things is just bringing a really surprising and unexpected tone for a type of brand or category. I think flipping what you would expect is such a good way in. You know, it just really often leads to the best work. So I think they've really done that here in a way that's just, yeah, it's fantastic.
Do you think with Dom, with some of these ones, I guess the tone is really, really important. And then also kind of David, as you mentioned there at the end, sort of, I guess, leaving you with something. You kind of mentioned that the ad we saw beforehand from Fuck the Cupcakes, you were a little bit unclear as to what it was actually asking you by the end of it.
Yeah, I would have liked to have seen at the end of the Fuck the Cupcakes something that quantified when, which sounds a bit weird, but the line would have been stronger at the end if it had said all of these things have been experienced by women in the past year. And I know that we have a huge problem to solve, but I think we often talk about issues in a way that's quite timeless. And what the monkeys have done is really quantified something. I actually think at the end of the spot from When Will She Be Right, the line was, we're 100 years away, but we could do it in 10, find out how. And that all of a sudden starts to reframe a really big problem into something that you could take action on and you could make happen. And when you're dealing with a problem this big and behavior change this big, I think you need to give people a way in to start to understand how they can help and how they can be part of the solution. Otherwise, I think it feels a bit overwhelming and people really struggle with what to do next.
Yeah, and we've got, as we mentioned at the top of the show, we've got the ACA's Tony Hale and Harina Starrett kind of coming on the podcast to discuss a similar topic in, I guess, relevance to the advertising industry in particular. So hope you'll stick around for that. On to the next two. We've got two more to go. They're a little bit more, I guess, lighthearted. The first one here is from Cars 24. It's its second campaign since launching into the Australian market in September last year. This one's from Milkman, and it's called Dodge the Dodgy Car Dealers. David, how do you think Cars 24 kind of sells itself as a challenger brand in a super stacked category in Australia? And what did you make of that approach?
Yeah, their business model is definitely interesting, isn't it? And we know people just hate used car dealers. And I think there's, you know, it feels like with the tech and, you know, logistics opportunities now, the idea that they can actually just make good on this promise is pretty cool. So, yeah, it is very challenging. Obviously, they've got an enemy and they're really portraying that, you know, most of the ad is the enemy, right? So you're kind of left with that, you know, as one of the main outtakes. I like the, I suppose the intent of it, I really like. I love the line. I think the future of used cars is really, really strong. I think that there could be lots of stuff that you could do, you know, going forward on that one. I'm not quite sure. It's tricky, I suppose, when you're trying to, you know, take aim at your enemy. You've got to make sure that, you know, in this case, they're trying to be, you know, really, really funny with that one. I'm not sure every single line kind of works. But
yeah,
I guess that it's an enemy that everyone hates, you know, so it'll probably resonate with a lot of people.
I guess it's one of those ones where it's not a specific enemy. It's a sort of an idea of an enemy. Dom, did it make you kind of think back to any dodgy car dealers you've had to come across? Or?
Look, I love the line as well. I think I really agree with you, David, on the line. The point of making the enemy dodgy car salesman missed the mark a little for me. I actually think the enemy for these guys is a new car. And it just feels like maybe the trope of a dodgy salesman has been well covered. They've probably done their research, so I do need to caveat it by saying I'm not in the market for a car. But I think we're at a point in time where new cars are really hard to buy. There's a 6 to 8 month waiting period on a new car, like supplies are low. I think they could have maybe tapped into a different insight about the enemy for them is new cars and they can make buying a used car really, really easy. That feels like it might have been a better tension for the story. It felt like it sort of just took me back to something a little dated with the well-worn, dodgy, bad teeth salesman tropes.
Yeah, I felt like that a bit. I thought that I kind of agree with you. I thought the opportunity would surely be to sort of position it against, like, look, it's so hard. You know, you've got to wait a year to get a new car. Buy something just as good off our app. And, you know, that's the kind of position that we're going to take up. But anyway, you know, we'll see what they do with the next one. It was already quite different to their first campaign, so I'm sure they'll keep making fun spots. Finally, we move to the organic yogurt brand 5AM's first major campaign in over 3 years. This one created by The Works, part of Capgemini. This animated spot features, my favorite part is the name of the cow, Steve Moo Queen, as the cow looks on to the more luxurious lives of cows in the organic fields across the paddock, then plotting a grand escape. David, what did you make of the grass is greener approach? And then Dom, I'd like to ask you what you think from the strategist's point of view makes a good ad in this category.
Well, I really love sound effects, and the sound effect of the udder wobbling when it's the cows running was particularly good. I really like that one. I'm a very simple, creative. Just a sound effect is enough to get me to like it. But look, it is very charming. I think, the kind of Chicken Run sort of esque world they're creating, I'm sure will sort of, it's quite a crowd pleaser, isn't it? I think, just on the line, one of those things I feel like that wraps it up. You know, it does feel like one of those things where the clients crowbarred their brand name into there. I can imagine it might have been the grass is greener on the organic side to start with, and they've had to chuck in the 5AM, which I think feels a bit clunky. It's quite charming. I mean, there was something we were just discussing before about the, you know, what makes a good ad in the organic category. Was that something you were?
Yeah, well, I was going to ask Dom that, but I think we were discussing that beforehand as well. Yeah. Go ahead, David, if you.
I was just going to say, I think the answer to that is that there isn't one answer to it, because, you know, I think being really authentic can work in some regards and a completely different on one hand, and then, but doing something that's really emotive or that's really funny can also work. So I think just because it's an organic category doesn't mean that there's only one way into it. That's probably my take.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. I actually quite like this ad. I think it's really simple. Happy cows make happy yogurt. It gets the message across really clearly. I liked that it really avoided all of the category conventions of mum chopping up fruit and then, you know, cows in rolling fields. So I think there was a lot of personality to it. I think the assets are distinctive. It looks like this is going to be the first in the series, so I can see them rolling this out over and over again. I had a comment that only someone that's watched the ads 4 times in a row would have, which is, why was Stevie Moo Queen not a 5AM cow? I kind of feel like maybe she should have been the 5AM cow liberating cows that didn't have a happy life. but that's definitely overthinking the problem. In the category, this is good. It's distinctive work. It stands out, looks different from every other yogurt brand, and the message is really clear.
And after we've spoken about all six, to put you on the spot, what was your favourite of the six each?
It's got to be the monkey's work for me, I think. It's a tough brief that they've challenged really well, and it's kind of terrifying and motivating at the same time.
Yeah, I love the monkey's UN work. I think just such an unsettling tone. I think it really unexpected. It really suits the fact that they've got, it's so strong how they've framed the fact in that really powerful way. I just think it just adds so much punch to their point. Really well crafted and just feels really, really fresh for that, the cause.
Brilliant. Well, that concludes another edition of the Audio Campaign Review. Up next, we have the ACA's Hannah Sturrock and Tony Hale. For this next section, I'd like to welcome the Advertising Council of Australia's CEO, Tony Hale, and National Head of Engagement, Hannah Sturrock. Welcome to you both.
Thank you.
And how are you doing today?
I'm doing very well, thank you.
So by the time this comes out, you will have presented your Create Space Report and Action Plan webinar on Thursday morning. We'll get into the results of the report in a little bit and kind of where we go from here. But I think a good place to start might be, Tony, if you could tell me why now was the time for this census. and to really look at the issue holistically and sort of what areas it looks at specifically?
Yeah, we've been aware for some time that there's lots of things that have happened in the advertising industry over the last 5 years. And there's pressure points here and there. And we're having a look at the UK, particularly with their all-in study that was done via Kantar. And we realised when you see the extent of the data on that, we just didn't have an accurate picture in Australia. And we didn't want to look at one or two issues. We wanted to have a holistic viewpoint. So we came to the conclusion pretty quickly that the best way to do it, as difficult as it was in a small country like Australia, where you don't have the critical mass that you might in the UK and in Europe, that we really needed to replicate a similar study that so that we could have a look at it across all measures, age, ethnicity, sexuality, religion, all of those things. We needed to have a complete look.
So I guess a few stats that come out of it, some of the headline ones we have to start. There was 2,652 respondents, quite a significant, I guess, census base to work from then. 81% of the respondents were in New South Wales and Victoria, more than 55% under 34 years old and 83% under 44, with a split of 60% female, 39% male and 1% non-binary. And Holdco and international brands taking up 41% with 22% multi-office Australian brands and 27% single office or independents. So I guess the results, they are, as we mentioned, they're quite significant. First of all, Hannah, it would be interesting for you to kind of take us through what you thought some of those headline, I guess, results were, or some of the more telling ones, and then how you sort of get the message across to the industry that this is a real representation, despite, you know, what some might, I guess, or have until now said isn't an issue.
Oh, I think the foundation of this project was to remove the sort of bias, inherent bias that we all bring to our view of the industry. We were adamant that doing a robust piece of strategic diagnosis had to underpin this project. Otherwise, we were sort of going in with a biased view, looking for data to support a biased view, and that would not have delivered a robust strategic plan. It wouldn't have been able to be something that we could support long term. So I think the methodology that we use, the sample size that we got, the analysis that we've done should really convince most people that this is an accurate picture of the industry. And it's worth saying it's a picture of the industry at a point in time, like any census. This was the people of the industry as of December 2021. We didn't collect a lot of qualitative data on what had happened historically in the advertising industry. We really asked you a lot of questions around your current employer and your experiences in the last 12 months. So it is accurate. It is how we look and feel and behave today. I think as a result, maybe some of the results that we initially got, they weren't as sensational and like headline grabbing as we were like, what? Oh, that's quite good, isn't it? Oh, that's not what we were expecting. So there was definitely plenty of data there to support the fact that the industry is in pretty good shape. You know, we're not doing too badly. We've basically got good internal relationships and people do feel that they belong, you know. You know, that culture of, yes, this is my place, this is my dysfunctional family. It did kind of come through, and maybe it didn't live up to the sort of shocking headlines that you read quite a lot in the media. But I think the real beauty of this data is that, yes, macro level, there's quite a lot of positives. It's the power to segment it and look at it through intersectional lenses. That's where you realize, okay, this is where experience kind of starts to divide, and there is a definite difference of experience when you are not part of the majority group. And if you belong to a marginalized group in one, two, or many ways, your experience of the industry is definitely not so rosy.
I thought the inclusion index score, which for listeners is the sense of company belonging plus absence of discrimination minus the presence of negative behaviours. So the score for the industry was 62, which is quite significantly above the Australian industry average, which I think was 43. But then in terms of advertising, just below the World Federation of Advertisers at 64 and the UK Ad Association of 67. Do you think that, why do you think that is in terms of the advertising industry being above, but it's still a conversation which is, I guess, so front of mind for this industry, Tony?
I think it has to be. We're a creative industry, and a creative industry really does rely on diversity, but it also relies on inclusiveness, and it relies on equity. You need to provide a safe space for people to be free to talk their minds. I've often described advertising as a collision sport. You don't sit in the stand. You've got to be there. And if you're on the ground and you're competing and you've got different perspectives and viewpoints you want to bring to the table, then you have to do it in a respectful manner. You have to allow people the space in which you have to create the space in which they can freely, confidently and openly give their perspectives. That's the way you get creativity. And creativity has a bit of attention around it already, because creativity is not always easy. There is a little bit of conflict and tension with good ideas that you need to be able to explore. So from advertising, you have to be better than other industries. Mm-hmm. Other industries are a lot more process-driven. We're not. We're creatively driven, and you have to provide that that environment, that culture.
Yeah, I mean, I would agree, and I would say, you know, I think maybe one of the issues has been a certain complacency on tackling. I know because this report does cover, you know, everything from diversity inclusion to, you know, other things like sexual harassment. I mean, one of the stats that kind of jumped out to me, I think it was on the slide that said what we are doing well, and it said 73% of companies are taking or actively taking steps to improve diversity and inclusion in the workplace. But I kind of read that and I flipped it and I thought, well, more than a quarter of companies in the Australian industry are not actively taking steps. Do you think, you know, is there always improvement in these, and are we going to continue to have to keep improving?
Yes. I think you're taking the perspective exactly as you need to. In this industry, in many ways, you've got to have a glass half full perspective, because you've got to be optimistic. You've got to be looking for the future. But by the same token, if you don't cast a critical lens over everything, you know you're not going to continue to improve. So I think you're absolutely right. It's not just about what you're doing, it's about what you're not doing, because unless you're continually evolving, unless you're continually trying to chase perfection, which you'll never reach, it's just like the creative process. You know, every time you get a brief, you're trying to chase that perfect answer, and I think the industry has to have that restless and relentless nature to it to continue to improve.
I was going to say that idea of the perception that people are taking active steps being 70%. Remember, this is the perception of the people within the industry. So yeah, it might be that everybody's working on it, but it might not be that obvious to everyone. It might be that you've done your policies. It might be that you've got, you know, some kind of gender balance if you look at it through a particular angle. But this is talking to the people in the industry. They don't all feel that everyone's actively taking steps. So, you know, there's also that angle to reflect on.
And Hannah, to Tony's point before about approaching things with, you know, that balance of glass half full, and also, I guess, I found it interesting, maybe a shift in the sort of language that ACA has used. There was a statement that ACA put out last week, which was quite strongly worded. And I feel like some of the language in the presentation also, I guess, takes a bit more of a stern tone. How important do you think that is in order to get people to sort of take this seriously?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you've got to balance. There's always this balance going on. And it's a hard one, to be honest, because there's no point sort of couching everything in sort of just percentages. We have to be able to tell the story that comes out of the data and humanize it. And we do have some great qualitative data as well, with quotes from people that really, when you read the quotes, it's like, yes, you feel that this is actually happening. And it doesn't really matter if, perhaps from your own personal perspective, you don't see it that much. You haven't felt it that much. It's our job to present this data in a way that you can't not acknowledge that these are real people's experiences and feelings. And you know what? Even for you, perhaps in a very privileged position, where perhaps the industry has treated you really well, and you don't see a lot of discrimination, our job here is to force some sort of recognition that we don't see everything with 2020 vision. We see everything through our own personal bias. I might think that the biggest issue is gender representation, but I might be looking at that from my position as a privileged white woman who's had plenty of support in the industry, and no one has ever asked me that, you know, commented on the fact that I speak for English very well, or, you know, has never thought of me as a leader because I am, you know, from an ethnic minority. That's my experience of the industry, and I cannot assume that everybody else shares that. So I think we do have to use strong language. We do have to punch out some of these big learnings so that everybody can and will pay attention.
And Hannah, this well, now we've got the census report, the second part is the actual response and the action plan. You've called this phase one. Mm. Can you take us through a little bit of, I guess, what phase one will include, and how you will actually go about getting agencies and Australian advertising companies to kind of take this on board and, I guess, have some buy-in?
Yeah, this is absolutely phase one, because there is a lot of data from the census. And as we went through in the webinar, there are so many spots, fires that you could run towards and try and solve everything. And that is just not strategically smart, and not really practical. And I think most people just would feel overwhelmed if there was 25 things to go out and do tomorrow. So yeah, this is phase one. We've taken three pretty universal themes from the census that affect a lot of people in the industry, and chosen three calls to action for the industry to all rally around. And we've made these calls to action accessible as well. So this should be equally viable whether you're a 10-person agency or a 200-person agency, or you're just working as a consultant. Everybody can kind of inform themselves and take action in their own way around these three things that we've chosen. The first one is to address gender inequities and improve the experience and retention of female talent. The second action being to improve the experience for talent with mental health challenges, or something that's very widespread in our industry. And the third action is to address microaggressions for everyone to thrive, and particularly marginalized groups. Microaggressions is a fairly new term, but extremely common and very prevalent in the Australian industry. These are just these everyday little acts of exclusion or demeaning behavior that are almost benign. If you sort of don't, you know, if you take a generous view, you don't think that they're that serious, but actually cumulatively,
yeah,
there's a lot of mental distress there. So we've created actions around steps to take to address all three actions. We've made these things very much around awareness, driving, and steps that you can take to inform your team, refresh your sort of policies and compliance, and to build a culture where we're sort of destigmatizing, encouraging conversation, encouraging exploration, encouraging people to sort of inform themselves, read more, and familiarize themselves with these things so that it just becomes a more natural discussion in our industry. Yeah. That will hopefully increase awareness, but also increase kind of the accountability for the industry to actually measure these things in a way that makes sense for them, depending on the size and nature of their business.
Yeah, and on those three areas there, just a couple of the findings which I thought were kind of a little bit, I guess, revealing. One in four women have been bullied or undermined in the workplace. 8% of women responded that they had been sexually harassed in the last 12 months alone, which I thought was a pretty shocking statistic. 28% affected by mental health, almost 50%. Or on the receiving end of microaggressions, as you spoke about there, and one out of five believed that they had been called out for potentially, well, not potentially, for being too overly politically correct. Tony, what would your response be, I guess, if an agency came back and said, well, this is all great, but we've actually got our house in order, so we're actually going to just keep on going how we've kind of got things set up already?
Well, let me answer it this way. I mean, the advertising industry, the Advertising Council Australia, in fact, most industry organisations, they're not legislative organisations. You can't dictate to any member exactly what they do. But what you can do is you can appeal to them in a number of ways, and you can set up methods to encourage them to do so. But the vast majority of members have got the resources, and they're already well down the track with all of these sort of things. It's not new to them. A lot of them are doing them in any case, doing these things in any case. But when you're an industry organisation, it's not all about the big ones. It's about the independents that may not have the resources in-house to enable them to get there. So in order to encourage them to do it, what you try and do is break the back of it. You try and say, here's what needs to be done, and develop some step-by-step guides, give them toolkits, give them resources, give them education, provide all of these things so they're a lot simpler. So if you're a 30 or 40 man or a person, I shouldn't say man, a person, because we know that 60% of them are going to be female, but if you're a 30 or 40% person organisation, it may well be that you're struggling to keep up with your work and you don't necessarily have the resources internally to start from scratch. So this enables any member, whether they're large or small, to be able to address some of the key issues. There's a great deal of camaraderie in the industry, and I think you'll find that there's supporting amongst members and amongst competitors to follow the track. The other thing you can do is that while you can't legislate, you can build minimum acceptable standards into accreditation. And we are building we're building an accreditation program at the moment. And from 2023, we will start to roll out an accreditation program that will have minimum acceptable standards in there. And it's very difficult to do that unless you provide the tools and resources in the first place. So you know, you've got to take it logically, step by step, so you can help all members, no matter whether they're holding companies, international brands, multi-office organisations, or single-office independents. You've got to be able to help all of them go on the common journey.
I was going to say that there's always a balance to be found, and it's that equal emphasis on, rather than, I think a lot of the narrative tends to be on cracking down, I think we're taking the approach of how do we build up. So as Tony said, we can't really set minimum standards unless we're investing in building up the awareness and the consciousness and the focus, and really helping people to understand that. I've worked in independent agencies for most of my career, and yet there are not a lot of resources going around who are just focused on HR, people and culture stuff. It is, you are stretched so thinly. I know that this sort of initiative would have been an absolute godsend to me, to have all of these things in a way that I was like, right, okay, I can do that. I know what that entails. They've given me a template. I can basically adapt that and go. So I think we're really taking the build-up approach, and then we can really uphold those standards with confidence.
Yeah. And you have committed to doing another census at the end of 2023. What would you like to see from that, I guess, a little as we look a little bit down the
movement.
Line?
Movement.
Yeah, we want to beat the UK. No, we would like
improvement.
Yeah, we would like our inclusion score to be higher. We would like to see a decrease in negative behaviour. I would really like, I don't want to see one in five people being likely to leave the industry because of diversity and a lack of inclusion and discrimination. If they leave because they want to do other things and try other industries, that's fine. But if they're saying that they're leaving because of a lack of inclusion and discrimination, that's something that we can and should be tackling as a business issue.
Hannah, Tony, thank you very much for joining me.
Thank you.
That is it for another week on the Mumbrellacast. Please make sure to subscribe on whatever podcast platform you listen to us on, and check out mumbrella.com.au for more content and updates. Dom and David, thank you very much for joining me this week.
Thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, pleasure.
And thanks to Hannah and Tony as well. See you next week.